Greetings once again, McBurney here, and you may have heard about the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't condescend to tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We're so glad to have you here, in the bunker at the McBurney compound behind the moat, alongside my extremely attractive audio engineer, as we roll into another week here. Do I want to start with these Satanists? This doesn't seem like the place to start on a Christian-oriented show. But I think I will start with the Satanists, since I don't have anything interesting that happened to me this week at all. Do I? I don't think so. Nothing. It was just the daily grind. By the sweat of your brow you shall eat of it, said the Lord. Yeah, it was just pretty much that all week. We're living the curse. Some people say, hey, I'm living the dream. Say, hey, I'm living the curse. Some weeks feel like that, okay? What, do you want me to just fake it and sit up here and smile and act like everything's hunky-dory all the time? Well, it's not. But we are doing fairly well. I mean, we can't complain. Certainly not as bad as the Christians in Iraq and Syria and, well, throughout the Middle East, frankly. And we'll get to some of that. But let's start with the Satanists in Oklahoma City. A group of New York Satanists has made their way to Oklahoma City, and they have rented out the Civic Center. And they claim to have sold out their black mass. That's right. They're holding a black mass. And they say that all the tickets for the September 21st event are sold out. The event, according to the co-founder of the... Now, this is the name of the satanic church. Dachma of Angra Mainyus. Mainyu? Mainyu. Dachma of Angra Mainyu. That's the name of the church. And the founder's name is Adam, oddly enough. I know. He says they've sold it out. They sold out the Civic Center in Oklahoma City? That seems hard to believe that Satanists would sell out. Oh, wait a minute. They were only selling 88 tickets. Why did you rent out the Civic Center? Why didn't you just rent out the Holiday Inn if you were just doing 88? Anyway, it's sold out. I guess I'll give him credit for that. And the founder of the Dachma of Angra Mainyu Church says that they will follow all state health laws and they will substitute vinegar for all of the actions involving urine.
What?
Urine, I said.
Why,
yeah.
Why substitute?
I don't know. Well, apparently the state health code says
they follow the rules.
Oh, they follow the rules, those Satanists. They're good at that, yeah. Let's see. During the Black Mass, the deacons of Dachma of Angra Mainyu are going to stomp, spit, and use explicit language upon an unconsecrated host. That's the wafer that the Catholics use, you know. The wafer represents the body of Christ. They're going to spit on it, they're going to stomp on it, and they're going to use explicit language on it. They're going to swear at it, I guess. And they're also going... It's like a Motley Crue concert. That's funny. A satanic exorcism will be performed in front of all 88 ticket holders. A satanic exorcism... I think they're going to do that after they swear at the host. A satanic exorcism is intended to draw the Holy Spirit out of a follower's body. Just outrageous. Yeah, how are they going to find somebody with the Holy Spirit?
Yeah.
Number one. Let's see. Over 80,000 people in Oklahoma have signed an online petition condemning the upcoming event. Okay. And then we have some Christian, the typical, we're going to be nice to them. We're going to pray for them. We're going to pray that the Lord will move on them. We're going to pray that God's love will abound. So, hey, I suppose that's fine, you know. But someone comes into my town with their high-handed swearing and urine and all of that. I pray that they'll repent. That's about all I'll pray for. But I suppose God loves them enough to allow them room to repent. And the Holy Spirit, even though he's being actively cast out, does have room to grant repentance to these filthy heathens. I myself don't have a lot of patience for. Oh, one more thing. The tickets, all 88 tickets, sold for $17.50 a piece. Now, that's not like a Motley Crue concert. I'm sure they get a lot more than $17.50. And no bloodletting of any kind will be allowed, just in case you were wondering. No bloodletting. Bloodletting, that's where you poke someone and then you allow the blood to just flow out of them. They say they're not going to do that. You're not familiar, huh, with the whole satanic black mass ritual? Okay, well,
sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. So there you have it. The Satanists in their attempt to overtake Oklahoma City, the buckle of the Bible Belt, by the way, a stronghold for Christianity. They won't make a pimple on the backside of everything good and decent in Oklahoma City. So don't worry about that. And hopefully just the sheer spectacle of it will cause someone in the group of 88 or 90 or whoever to reconsider. Bunch of idiots. All right, now, we move from Satanists into the strange religion file, where North Carolina teacher Ray Fournier teaches biology at, I can't pronounce it. Anyway, it's a government school, public high school, in North Carolina. And he says he calls himself an evangelist and a public school missionary. So he teaches biology at the government school, and he calls himself an evangelist and a public school missionary. He wrote an article where he said the following, quote, "Walking through the gates of the public high school where I teach feels as if I were walking into a concentration camp dedicated to the spiritual death of those imprisoned behind these walls." Okay. So the article was printed in a Christian magazine called No Greater Joy, published by the good folks who wrote the book Train Up a Child, that we highly recommend, by the way, and we offer it to all of our friends who have kids. So a lot of people got very upset with Mr. Fournier's concentration camp analogy. People are very sensitive about the whole concentration camp issue, apparently. And now Fournier, I got a little upset with his hypocrisy for teaching in the public schools and then claiming he's undercover and he's a missionary. I just don't know if I buy into all that. I mean, I can understand you preaching and teaching against people sending their kids into government schools, but then if you're getting a paycheck from said government school, that seems problematic to me. Not that I wouldn't be willing to sit down and talk with the fellow about it. Certainly wouldn't dismiss him out of hand. But he says that his point with the whole analogy, he also said, what else did he said? Something else that upset everyone. Oh, he claimed that the secular curricula and the student culture are like a spiritual gas chamber, he said. Yeah, and people got all upset. One senior at the local government school where Mr. Fournier teaches, a senior girl, she shared it with 1,000 of her Twitter followers, saying, "Anyone who talks so poorly of my school compares it to, like, a concentration camp and, like, blames the public school system for, like, turning people lesbian and, like, says public education makes teenagers lose their morals is outright ridiculous." Unquote. That was Lauren Foster, senior girl there at the government school that I can't pronounce the name of it. That's what she said. And then he's been overrun. He's had to post an apology. The article has been replaced on the website with an apology. I'll post this up. You can click through and read. In his apology, Fournier says that his comparison using the gas chamber and concentration camp analogies was unwise. But he stresses that the spiritual destruction of our children is serious. Now, I don't know why people get so upset about analogies, because after all, they're analogies. They're supposed to make a point. And I think these analogies, calling the curricula and the student culture spiritual gas chamber? I think that's a pretty good analogy. It brings to mind some of the most horrific events in human history. And in my opinion, what's going on with the government schools, the abuse that's being inflicted upon your kids, I think it's good to bring to mind some of the most horrible events in human history. And so I'm okay with the analogy. I'm not sure I'm okay with him working at the school. That's all. But anyway, I'll post this up. You can click through. And you can bet almost every time a Christian says something sensible, logical, fundamental, and uncompromising, the next day they issue an apology. Standard operating procedure. So if someone issues an apology over something, be sure to try to find whatever it is they're apologizing for and try to read that. It's probably very interesting. Now, do you remember T.J. Lane? Probably don't remember him by name, but he was a high school murderer, shot up his high school. Let's see, do they have the, get all the details here. He's in Ohio. He walked into his school cafeteria with a .22 caliber gun, randomly started shooting. He fired 10 shots, and he killed three of his fellow students. Well, he is in prison, serving consecutive life sentences without possibility of parole, plus 37 years. Very creative sentencing. How creative? It's so creative that T.J. Lane escaped from prison this past week. Now, he was captured, but he escaped from the Ohio prison, and he was found 100 yards away from the prison, hiding outside a church. So who knows what this maniac was planning to do at the church when some poor church member showed up. But the police, fortunately, showed up first. So, before, now do you remember T.J. Lane specifically? Let me bring him to mind. And I can't use any analogies because there's few things that are as horrible as what I'm about to read to you that I could analogize. T.J. Lane, at his sentencing, addressed the victim's family, all the families, using profane imagery and ending with the expletive, F all of you. He then held up his middle finger at the families of the kids he had slaughtered. The warden at the prison where T.J. Lane escaped and then was recaptured is quoted as saying, well, he wasn't in the maximum security facility. That's something we'll have to sit down and take a look at. What really needs to be taken a look at is how is this guy allowed to breathe and live at all? Unbelievable. The one problem about life without parole is that it leaves the chance. Number one, it allows them to live, profaning all that is good. And number two, it leaves open the possibility that they will escape and kill someone else, or that they'll kill someone else in the prison. Which is why a swift and painful death penalty should have been applied to T.J. Lane within seconds of him lifting his middle finger at his sentencing. That would have been the appropriate time. All right, now, fortunately, he is back in custody for the moment. Now, we move from a mass murderer well over to Detroit to cover, a mass murder. Over in Detroit, over this past week, this is reported to us from CBS, there was a prayer vigil being held on the west side of the city. Now, I read this article. I'm not sure what the prayer vigil was all about. Chances are, someone had been shot and killed, some young person. And so the community got together and staged a prayer vigil. Well, just as the prayer vigil was wrapping up, a vehicle drove by and a gunman opened fire on the group. At least 8 people were struck by gunfire, according to CBS. The CBS reporter says the people were struck by gunfire. Just another one of my little pet peeves in how they report the news in the whatever, I don't know what you call this, the third person passive. I'm not a grammatical expert, but they were struck by whoever fired the gun. What's that?
Like lightning, right?
Yeah, like, now lightning, you can be struck by lightning, yeah, but that's a whole different thing. But you can't be struck by gunfire. I guess technically if you're a lawyer, you could say he was struck by No, I don't think he can even say that, but there it is right there for everybody to read. One man was killed at the scene. This is at the prayer vigil in Detroit. A vehicle was seen speeding away, chased by police. It crashed into a fire hydrant, and one woman was ejected and declared dead at the scene, and another man in the back seat was also killed in the crash. So we got a prayer vigil in Detroit. We got one person shot to death, and then two people involved in the shooting died in the car crash. It appears everyone, according to CBS, it appears everyone involved in the shootout knew each other. Maybe they were all at the same prayer vigil. They say this may be some type of family feud. Because later on at the hospital, relatives of those involved were also reportedly arrested after an altercation broke out. So a fist fight takes place at the hospital, after the car crash, after the shooting, after the prayer vigil in Detroit, where there is a serious lack of domestic tranquility. View. Hey, I didn't expect Stevie to jump in on me there. That was Crossfire, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Detroit, all of that. It's the Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you here. And I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the latest beheading of another Western hostage. David Haynes was killed by Islamist, Islamo-fascist. Call them what you want. I don't think we should call them a state, although I'm not sure, because if they want to act like a state, then we can treat them like a rogue state and vanquish them. Of course, we don't need to get into semantics when it comes to destroying these maniacs, unless we're lawyers. But we do need to destroy them, and we will. Well, we will have to, I suppose. David Haynes was a British citizen. David Cameron is the British Prime Minister. He was quoted as saying this, quote, "Step by step, we must drive back, dismantle, and ultimately destroy ISIL and what it stands for." Mr. Cameron, you're no Winston Churchill. Obviously, David Cameron is a lawyer. Because at a time when what is needed is for a leader to stand up and make a very clear and concise statement, Mr. Cameron stands up and starts, well, we must drive him back, dismantle the... It's like Barry with his... What was Barry's line? We're going to degrade and destroy. Mr. Obama, destroy is sufficient. How you get there is, you know, please, leave that. We'll leave that up to you. You're the leader of the free world. We'll trust you with that. Oh, boy. No. You can't say that, right? No. You can't say it. David Cameron's the best we've got, and he's pretty weak. It's just sad. President Obama, upon hearing David Cameron's lawyerly speech, offered U.S. support for its what Barry called, quote, our ally in grief. Now, let me be the first to extend my condolences to the family of David Haynes. But I cannot weep for David Haynes like his family can. And neither can Barack Obama, neither can David Cameron. And for them to act like they can and that they're so deeply affected by this is ridiculous. Well, you know, you're the leader of the free world, these two fellas, Cameron and Obama. The leaders of the free world. You can spend a minute or two offering your condolences. But to wallow as an ally in grief for more than a few minutes is, well, it's professional negligence on your behalf. You should immediately issue rousing speeches, rallying the troops to make war and rain hell and damnation upon these people who killed our fellow citizens and allies. But that, well, that's just not what we have anymore. And so who knows? Maybe we lose this long war against the Islamo-fascists. Maybe we lose. I mean, Barry said, hey, we've always won before. Well, Barry, that was before you were in charge. So, very disturbing. Very disturbing. And I think I figured out how it is that I asked the question when Jim Foley was beheaded by these maniacs. I asked the question, how do you get a grown man to sit on his knees while you chop off his head? How do you do that? I just can't imagine myself, anyway, sitting there and letting someone grab my head and saw. I just can't imagine. Not biting, kicking, I mean, just anything, right? Now, I don't know if I've given this theory on the air yet. Have I? No, you don't think so? All right. Anyway, I think these three guys were tricked. I think they were all killed back when Jim Foley was killed. And I think they were told they were taking part in a propaganda stunt and that they were far too valuable as hostages for ransom. But just play along, make these speeches, and then we're going to act and we're going to do this. And then the maniacs actually cut off their heads, but not at that scene. I think that was all done later. But anyway, I think these guys have been dead for a while. That's my theory for whatever it's worth. I just can't think of another way how you get three guys in a row to sit like that and allow that to happen. I'd think after the first one that the second guy would have, it's just anything. Okay, I'll move on. We'll move from the maniacs over. See, well, we started with a maniac, right? Well, we didn't start there, but we talked about T.J. Lane. He's a maniac. We got Jihadi John over in Syria beheading Allied hostages, maniacs. And now we come over here. Now, so that's the war abroad. But what about at home? Here in America, politicians take pride in saying there hasn't been a terrorist attack on U.S. soil since 9/11. They say that all the time. It was straight faced too. I know. Well, out of West Orange, New Jersey, Ali Mohammed Brown was arrested for a murder spree. He said he considered it his mission to murder a 19-year-old American, Brendan Tevlin. He called it an act of vengeance for innocent lives lost in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and Iran. Yeah, Ali Mohammed was his name. He also confessed to killing three other men. Prosecutors say Ali Mohammed Brown is a devout Muslim. Authorities in New Jersey characterized Tevlin's June 25th murder as a robbery that turned violent. So that's how the authorities classified it. But the perpetrator classified it as jihad. So who do we believe here? I think I'd have to take Mohammed's word on it. That it's actually jihad right here on American soil. I wonder how many more of these guys are here. Well, there's plenty of them here. And so I remember back after 9/11, I used to say that, yes, the Muslim fanatics are a threat, but they're not nearly as much of a threat to you and your family as the culture of immorality, adultery, pornography, sexual immorality, homosexuality, the seduction of your children in the government schools and the destruction of their soul and their mind and their body. That's far more dangerous. And while I still think that's true, I think the Muslims are coming up hard along the rail. So we need to keep our eyes on them. And we do have jihad here in the homeland increasingly. So, you know, starting with the LAX counter shooting at the El Al and then Nidal Hassan, there was the recruiters shot in Arkansas. a lot of little attacks. Well, we call them little, but it destroyed and ruined the lives of their families forever. So I should say small-scale attacks, but brutal nonetheless. All right, so we have the beheading of yet another hostage. We have jihad here in New Jersey from Ali Mohammed, right there on the homeland soil. And now we move to your army. That's right, the United States Army, the group tasked with defending us against the forces of darkness who would drag us into a thousand years of hell, the Islamists. And here's what's happening in your army. This is from starsandstripes.com. Dateline, Columbia, South Carolina. Drill Sergeant Leader Danielle Brooks is 5 feet, 4.5 inches tall, and she lives in Northeast Richland with her wife. That's what I said, with her wife. Yeah. I just had to read that line. That's all. I just wanted to get that across. You know, as the Islamists are gearing up for their caliphate, this is what your army's up to. Stars and Stripes reminds us that drill sergeants are chosen from the top 10% of soldiers in the army. And drill sergeant leaders, which is what Danielle is, drill sergeant leaders represent the top 1% of drill sergeants. So this is the best of the best of the best of the best of the army. She's a drill sergeant leader, and she lives in Northeast Richland with her wife. Danielle Brooks, said she wanted to become a drill sergeant leader to instill a high level of discipline in the Army. She said drill sergeants have the most impact on the Army. Well, and she's right about that, I'm sure. I mean, drill sergeants aren't exactly Marine Corps drill instructors, but they do have their impact. And Danielle and her wife are having an impact on the Army. That just goes to show you what the top Army brass thinks is the best of the best. If you have a wife at home and you're a girl, you're the best. That automatically springs you ahead of all the normal people. All right. And also, from the Washington Times, the U.S. Army, sociologists at the U.S. Army. We have sociologists in the U.S. Army? That right there, I'm wondering, well, why do we have those? Can they clean a rifle? Can they carry a mortar? I don't know. U.S. Army sociologists are worried about a lack of black officers leading combat troops. Now, a brigadier general is quoted as saying, "The Army leadership does have an action plan in place, and it's complicated to deal with the shortfall. Lack of black officers." Apparently that's an issue. There's a colonel quoted here. He's the director of sociology at the U.S. Military Academy, a position that should be eliminated, by the way, in my opinion. The director of sociology at West Point says, "The people of America need to know that the Army is not only effective, but representative of them." "Actually, Mr. Director of Sociology, we'll settle for just effective." Yeah, forget the representative part. That's not really part of the... Now, we're okay with effective. Go back and address the issue of the lesbian drill sergeants. Talk about effectiveness. I'm sure lesbians are just as effective in combat as anyone else, I suppose. Just embarrassing. So you got to wonder if Jihad John, I mean, if he reads the news, if he checks the Drudge Report, if he checks Breitbart, CNN, WorldNet Daily, Fox News, Jihad John's got to be pretty positive about the prospects of the caliphate. Why don't you grow up? I think this drill sergeant knows what it takes to be a man. Sergeant Danielle Brooks. Okay, don't turn it up. I'm Doug McBurney.
These guys just aren't going to stop.
All right, boys. Put those toys away. All right. Now we're going to move on to important sports news. Important. Yeah, sports news. Yeah. We cover a lot of sports because we're such big sports fans here. We live in Denver, Colorado, where it's like the number one or two sports crazy towns. Oh, Denver's huge sports. Oh, yeah. And so, of course, we're big sports fans here. And we're going to talk a little bit about Ray Rice, the guy who punched his girlfriend out in the elevator, it was. Yeah. You know, when I was in counterterrorism school, we were learning a pistol, indoor, close quarters pistol tactics. And I can't remember how many shots were fired, but they showed us the report, an FBI file, of an FBI agent and a criminal in an elevator, and some ridiculous number of shots was fired, like 21 shots. And neither man was hit. It was in an elevator. I don't know if they made it up, but they showed us a file up on a... It looked real. Anyway, I don't know why... Oh, because they were in an elevator. So Ray Rice... Him and his former girlfriend, she's his wife now. He apparently plays football for the Ravens. Imagine that, the Ravens. So he's caught on videotape punching out his girlfriend. Now they're married, and she's saying, "Please, we worked it out. Leave us alone." And I'm kind of in that vein, you know. If they got married, and you know he hasn't knocked her out again, I don't know. He should probably be arrested, though. He should probably be counseled. But as far as the whole public scene about it, well, you make your bed and you got to sleep in it. The guy punched her out, and for that, he should pay the price. Now that he's married to her, I'm not sure what the price is. Maybe he should have to stay married to her. I'm sure they have just a wonderful life together. All right, anyway... The point that I was going to make, though, was regarding Ray Lewis, who is... You remember Ray Lewis was the guy who... He was involved in killing another man. Him and two of his friends killed someone in a parking lot, and they all got away with it. Yeah. Ray Lewis, he hid evidence, he lied. Anyway, Ray Lewis is now an ESPN analyst and two-time Super Bowl champion and all of that. He says there's no comparison between his off-field conduct and Ray Rice's. Well, that's true, because Ray Rice didn't kill her, see? Is that what you're saying? Ray Rice, he didn't kill the girl, see? Ray Lewis, he killed the guy. So as far as that goes, there's very little comparison. Anyway, Ray Lewis states that... He's very, very upset about the whole Ray Rice incident because, number one, he says, I really took Ray Rice up under my wing and I tried to mentor him, says Ray Lewis. Apparently some lessons were learned by Mr. Rice. Lewis also stated that his mother was a victim of domestic violence. Yeah, every time one of these stories comes out, everybody drags someone out of the closet in their family who was a victim of domestic abuse. Like, I could care, Mr. Lewis. I wouldn't believe you as far as I could throw you. Anyway, Lewis was apparently asked by someone on the panel. I don't watch ESPN. What's the name of this show? Monday Night Countdown on ESPN. Monday Night Football. I don't watch it, so I wouldn't have caught this. But apparently somebody brought up the issue of, hey, Ray, remember when you killed that guy? What do you think of Ray Rice smashing his girlfriend in the mouth there in the elevator? I'm not sure how it came up, but something like that. And Ray Lewis said, there is no comparison. This is nothing about me. There is no comparison of me and Ray Rice. It's night and day. It's night and day of anything we ever have ever been through. And that's why both situations are totally different. That's an exact quote of what he said. He was asked if it was hypocritical of the Ravens to cut ties with Rice after standing by him. Hey, Ray, you remember when you killed that guy in that parking lot and the Ravens didn't fire you? You think it's hypocritical of the Ravens, you know, they fired Rice, especially after you killed that guy? No, they say he was involved in a murder in 2000. Lewis, according to this report from Breitbart, was charged with murder and aggravated assault, charges that were later dropped in exchange for Lewis pleading guilty to obstruction of justice and testifying against two of his companions, both of whom were later acquitted. So they found the dead guy's blood on all three of these fellas, and since they couldn't figure out who actually landed the fatal blow or gunshot or knife wound, I forget all the details, they couldn't quite figure out which one of the three actually landed the fatal blow. They let all three of them got away. And Ray Lewis went on to play football. And so anyway, I don't want to minimize the act of a drunk guy punching out his drunk girlfriend in a elevator, because it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. I don't think it's a death penalty case, as is the case with Ray Lewis, who should have been executed. And I hope Mr. Rice and his lovely wife have a wonderful life together. Let me just leave it at that. All right. Now we move into the personhood file. This is a difficult story. Pastor Lee Jong-rak is from South Korea, and he has created a drop box for unwanted children in his home city. So he's a pastor, a Christian pastor. He creates, have you seen these? They have these here in Colorado. They're called, I think they're called Safe Places. They actually have a sign. It looks like a fireman with his hands out extended. And you're allowed to drop off your infant child, and no questions asked. You can just scurry off into the night. And so we have these here. Well, he started one in Korea. He says he didn't expect babies to show up. Well, what do you mean he didn't expect babies to show up? You open a drop box for unwanted children, wouldn't you assume? I would assume you have the expectation that somebody's going to drop some off. Maybe he was hoping nobody would. I don't know. Anyway, apparently over in Korea, there's a lot of mothers killing their children and then killing themselves. Apparently that's something of an epidemic there. And so he opens this drop box. He says he didn't expect the babies to show up, but the babies sadly have shown up. And he says now he's saved the lives of the innocent. Now, this is a difficult question. It's the same question I brought up when the fire stations around Colorado became baby safe places, and you could just abandon your child on the steps of the... So, I mean, how do we mitigate the damage that we do to people when we give them a place to abandon their children and we advertise it, and then they do it? They abandon their child and scurry off into the darkness. Now that person is damaged. Is it a high enough return on investment that we save the life of the child? I suppose it is, huh? I suppose it is. Well, I guess if right now if they're killing the kids, well, there isn't, you know, if they're killing them and we can save them, well, there isn't anything better than that. But maybe that's the problem. It's not better. It's not better that we give someone a place to abandon their child, and then they instead of killing their child, they abandon their child. It's not better. It's just not as destructive. It's not as evil. It's not as wicked, but it's not better. It's not better. You know, it's similar. It's a similar argument that's made by the abortion regulators. I had a debate over this weekend with Steve Ertelt. Steve Ertelt of LifeNews.com, I think, and been a big abortion regulator for years, has written rules on and endorsed and supported regulations on exactly how and when certain children can be killed so that, in the hopes that certain other children might be saved. And so the abortion regulator says, well, look, right now, it's all abortion all the time, abortion on demand, and they're going to kill all these kids. And so isn't it better if we write a regulation, even if it accepts some, but if it saves some, isn't that better? Well, no, it's not better. It's not as evil, Well, and maybe I shouldn't even say it's not as evil. Maybe there's just not as many people being killed, but it's not better. Similar argument. Anyway, a difficult problem. The sad thing is that there's mothers in Korea or anywhere else who are killing their children and killing themselves. We need to get to the root of that problem, because leaving drop boxes for babies and trying to regulate abortion, these are hopeless strategies in winning a victory in the overall battle. They're hopeless strategies. I know some of you who listen to the show, you think it's okay to pass what you call restrictions on abortion. And I'm okay with restrictions. I'm okay if we wrote a rule that said you can't abort a certain child. But you can't accept the other ones in the writing, in the law. See, that's the problem I have with the regulations. But we'll talk more about that later. I just downloaded this report yesterday here from Breitbart. 53% of Hispanic births in America are now illegitimate, out of wedlock. Yeah. Now, the story is from Breitbart, and it's a bunch of Republican hacks going on and on and on about how Democrat policies are to blame. Wow, President Obama, Democratic welfare state. Anyway, I was just shocked that more than half of Hispanic babies are born out of wedlock. I mean, in a community like this, I grew up in West Texas around all kinds of Mexican kids, and very few of their parents were divorced. I mean, half the white kids' parents were divorced. Almost none of the Mexican kids. But and that's 30 years ago, so I think there's blame to go around to the Republicans, the Democrats, everybody. The government schools, the everything. It's unbelievable that what's happened to the Hispanic community. And, of course, we already have documented here what's happened to the black community and the illegitimacy rates. Not to mention the white people. The human race, for crying out loud, is being destroyed by liberalism, secularism, humanism, the welfare state. It's not a Democrat problem. It's not a Republican problem. It's a humanist problem. You know, if it keeps on raining, levee's going to break. You know it? It's going to happen. I'm telling you. Now, we move from half of all Hispanics being born illegitimate, out of wedlock. We move from there back over to Korea. Ashley Madison, according to JewishBusinessNews.com. Ashley Madison. This story was sent to me, by the way, from my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, a show contributor, a regular show contributor, who I don't give credit often enough, Ashley Madison, the Canadian-based adultery website, is suing the South Korean government for banning the website there in South Korea. Yeah, the website connects married people who are looking to have affairs. Yes, the CEO... whose name, will I mention his name or not? No, we won't mention his name. The CEO says that the blocking of the site for illegal activity is unjust. This is a guy who runs a website that encourages married people to connect for adulterous affairs. Adultery, according to Jewish Business News, is currently illegal in South Korea. Notice they say currently. That's because people like Ashley Madison are hell-bent on changing that. And when I say hell-bent, I don't mean it as an analogy or a figure of speech. Hell-bent on eliminating adultery as a crime, the criminality of adultery. Anyway, adultery is illegal in South Korea, but the CEO of Ashley Madison says that his site produces no content urging infidelity, and he wonders why other social media sites aren't equally penalized on the grounds of encouraging illicit sexual behavior. Well, for one thing, Mr. CEO, your ads for your website, they actually say, life is short, have an affair. How can you say that you don't produce anything that encourages... I don't. Anyway, what does he think, we're idiots? I think he does. He makes his living off of idiots. And so he thinks the whole world is filled with the same morons who use his website. The CEO says that his site is simply a social networking site facilitating communications between like-minded adults. He says there is no adultery that happens on AshleyMadison.com. A point that is technically accurate, right? He's been talking to his lawyers. He says our users write everything, so therefore we don't, it's not us. Our users, they produce the content related to adultery, not us. Yeah, he says Facebook would have to be shut down. He says you can't selectively just pick on us and make an example out of us just because our motto is life is short, have an affair. By the way, his site is also banned in Singapore, where adultery is still illegal. And they still, hopefully, cane little bastards who paint graffiti on cars, hopefully. See, I read stories like this, and I get a little bit upset. Because I have three daughters that I have been trying to raise to be pure and innocent and wonderful people. And I just know that the wolves are just crouching at the door. As soon as my girls go out in the world, there's wolves and sharks just ready to pounce. And it's people like this guy at Ashley Madison. Anyway, he should be arrested. And adultery should be illegal, and anyone who encourages or facilitates adultery should be punished to the full extent of the law. All right. Now, speaking of people who should be arrested, Barack Obama hosted a private dinner with a group of what the Weekly Standard calls foreign policy experts. Yeah, last week he had this private dinner. Among the attendees at the dinner was one Sandy Berger. Do we remember Sandy Berger? Do we all remember him? He worked for Bill Clinton as a national security advisor many, many, many moons ago, back in the 90s. But he rose to national infamy when he was arrested for stealing and destroying classified documents that related to President Clinton's record on terrorism. It's thought that he actually stole the memo that created the wall of separation between the FBI and the military that allowed the terrorists to puncture our armor there on 9/11. That's what it's thought, but we don't know, because whatever some of the stuff Sandy stole, he actually destroyed it. And he got away with it. He was actually sentenced to community service and probation and fined $50,000 for removing documents from the National Archives and intentionally destroying some of them. A lot of you may not remember this. This was almost 10 years ago. It was 2005 when he was sentenced. Anyway, he had to do his 100 hours of community service. He paid the fine. He paid his $6,905 for the administrative costs of his 2-year probation. And a district judge was completely satisfied. Anyway, Berger took extraordinary steps to cover up his crime. He gave up his law license, whatever. He made a deal with the Department of Justice after being caught stealing and destroying classified documents. And he never had to give a full explanation of what he had taken and why he had taken it, which is just unbelievable. I remember at the time I was stunned and shocked. He was basically allowed to walk. And he had dinner with Barry Obama last week. As a national security expert in the shadow of the ISIS crisis, for crying out loud. The president's meeting with Sandy Berger. He should be meeting with combat officers, generals, lieutenant colonels, colonels. He should be meeting with people who know about armor, infantry, airstrikes, air and naval gunfire. Oh, he should be meeting with those guys. Instead, he's meeting with Sandy Berger. How to cover up the myriad ways you left America open to the terrorists. That's why you invite Sandy Berger to dinner. He just did it right in front of God and everybody. It was unbelievable. All right. Now, speaking of Sandy Berger, let's go to Bill de Blasio in New York. That's not an awkward segue. It works perfectly. Bill de Blasio is such a communist traitor that he does not have a security clearance. He cannot get classified information from the federal government should New York City be under terrorist attack. And he's the mayor of New York. He can't get a security clearance. Well, they say he could get a security clearance, but it would probably be difficult because he would have to endure a vetting process that would include questions about his 1991 trip to communist Cuba and his support for the Marxist Sandinista regime during his visit to Nicaragua in the 1980s. So he's an outright flaming communist traitor enemy of America. He's been elected mayor of New York by the mentally deranged citizenry there in New York. Or possibly, it could be that the Democrat machine is so entrenched in New York City that even though there are still some sane people there, there's no way they'll ever elect another person who's not a straight-up red communist. I mean, if your mayor can't get a security clearance, perhaps he should be impeached and thrown out of office. Just in case something bad happens. A terrorist attack could happen in New York. Okay? One source said he hasn't applied for the clearance, probably because he doesn't want to go through that. He doesn't want to answer questions about his communism and his support for the sworn enemies of America for the last 30 years. All right, so there you go, New York. I wish you the best of luck with that whole de Blasio situation. That's not good. All right, now we go to the science. Really? Vile. According to the Business Insider, mankind is undergoing a major evolutionary transition comparable to other major shifts in our history, like the shift from ape to human. Yes. This is according to an evolutionary anthropologist, an evolutionary anthropology PhD student and a researcher at the Global Brain Institute. He says we're at the precipice similar to where we were when we made the transitions from apes to humans. Yeah, he said life expectancy has already increased, almost doubled in the 20th century. And he says it'll increase to about 120 years by 2050 through a combination of new technology, behavior, and natural selection. The ever popular natural selection with the evolutionary anthropologist. It's one of their favorite things. In fact, he gives it a personality. Yeah, he says natural selection shapes the length of an organism's life and the timing of key events to produce the most surviving offspring. Natural selection. It's almost like natural selection is a person. It shapes the length. Yeah, it does things, natural selection does. Well, this whiz kid also says, three major shifts in primate history have occurred toward longer lives and delayed reproduction between prosimians and monkeys and apes and humans, and here we are again on the precipice of another major evolutionary shift. He says, today and even more so in the future, collective human life depends upon knowledge and economic prosperity. Isn't that the same thing that the serpent told Eve at the tree? Isn't that the exact same thing? Improve your life with knowledge and economic prosperity. The same lie now coming out of the mouth of an evolutionary anthropology PhD student and quoted as if it has some credibility by the Business Insider, which is a generally credible news source. I mean, at least for business news. But they might want to leave the anthropology aside over at the Business Insider. Was there anything else I wanted to say about this? Oh, so none of the changes that he talks about involve shifting from human to something else. These other three, they were all allegedly shifts between different species of animals. Apparently, we're just going to live longer, and I guess that's the best we can do in the evolutionary environment of the 21st century. But hey, I guess we'll take whatever we can get. Now, finally, we go to a couple of young ladies, Lexi and Lindsay Kite. They're the co-founders of Beauty Redefined, and they were interviewed on CNBC. They say they've launched a social media campaign urging a boycott of Carl's Jr. because of their pornographic commercials. And we applaud. We applaud the sisters. Thank you very much. They say they definitely target media that treats girls and women as a compilation of body parts. They said women are not something to be used and consumed and then discarded, and that's definitely what Carl's Jr. does with women in their advertisements. They are so right. The two sisters, they're targeting CKE Restaurant Holdings. They want you to boycott Carl's Jr. Here's what CKE Restaurant Holdings has to say. Wow, the women in our award-winning ads. Did I say that our ads are award-winning? They're award-winning, by the way. They've won awards. The women in our award-winning ads are intelligent, talented, beautiful, professional actresses and models. And we have only the greatest respect for women. By the way, keep in mind, our ads are targeting a specific demographic. Young, hungry guys. You get it? Wink, wink. All right, I'm going to officially participate in the boycott of Carl's Jr., of which I am a fan, by the way. I mean, at least of the food. But we've had something of a ban going here for quite some time, ever since the pornographic ads started coming out. And we encourage you to participate with us, along with Lexi and Lindsay Kite, in their boycott of Carl's Jr. And that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life, Denver Bible Church, TheologyOnline.com, KGOV.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.